Clough. How's it going today?
Going good. You?
No complaints yet. So, what have you been up to so far this weekend?
I'm gonna put it into the category of primarily yesterday was a whole bunch of dad stuff, which involved spending time with my neighbor taking limbs off of two massive maple trees that kind of ride the line between our properties. It's on my side, and it was actually about this time last year that we looked up at it and we realized how close some of those limbs were making it to both of our our roof lines. Okay. And there's a whole lot of wildlife in our neighborhood. We have a sort of a really big green space very close. So, you know, it's not in my neighborhood, rabbits, raccoons, squirrels, coyotes as well, like foxes, tons of stuff like that. So last year we looked at it. It gets stuck underneath all the other jobs you got to take care of, you know, and hang with the fam and doing school stuff. So we finally got to it yesterday. You know, branches, it's funny, you know, like always surprisingly heavy and a lot bigger than how they look from the ground. So that was yesterday. And then we had some friends over last night, just some old friends that we get together usually once a month now. When we first moved to this area, they were our neighbor. We're sort of in these townhomes, and then we both moved out at the same time. We sort of said it's time to grow, and we, you know, they said, well, if you folks are going, we're going too, which is a really sort of like, it's a kind moment of connection when you realize how purposeful that is. I mean, the street that we lived on together, it was awesome. It was really great. We're at a cul-de-sac, kind of like the end of a townhome line. So there's lots of space for the kids to play. Mm-hmm. Which you just hit that moment where you're like, you know, it's time to move on to sort of get something more like us, because the townhomes were very much kind of cookie cutter. Like they kind of all look the same, right? So each of us moved out, and now we just get together once a month intentionally to sort of do the games night. The kids run around like crazy people and just have a blast. How about you?
Yesterday was the first time that the seven-year-old had hockey. Oh. So we took him to hockey at 7:30 in the morning. And then my older son had baseball at 3. So in between there, I did some awesome schoolwork, which I don't know if most teachers feel proud when they've done their, when they've like brought, you know how, well, maybe you don't know, but you bring home a bag of stuff every weekend, and sometimes the bag just sits in the corner. Nothing happens to it. So I hit that bag hard Friday night, and then again yesterday in between the two sporting events, which was, it was great. So I got done everything I wanted to get done from work, and then went out for dinner, family dinner for my wife's birthday. So that was fun. And then today I've got more. Well, we have hockey and baseball today, so that's on. And then this is how I'm starting my day with you, which is pretty awesome, because it's great to connect again and talk about our week, what happened, what stood out. So, I mean, it's busy like yours. The neighbor thing is funny, because at our old house, we had the same thing. Like the neighbors would kind of, we lived in a court. Mm-hmm. And we would see each other all the time. And then next thing you know, everybody's kind of helping everybody with whatever projects are going on. And then here, the neighbors across the street, my youngest is in the same class as their twins. And they've always kind of played together, but now it's heightened. So I find that we've been outside a lot supervising the little one as he's playing with the neighbors across the street. And those parents are out supervising their kids as well. So we're hanging out, we're chatting while the kids are playing. And it's hilarious because they have one of those little Jeeps for kids, those motorized, battery powered. So they're ripping up and down the street with this thing. And we're basically observing, laughing at them, chatting about the lawn and other things that we're working on to prepare to shut things down for the summer. So it's been a really good vibe. It's almost been like therapeutic to be able to talk to the people in your neighborhood and just kind of connect as regular people and have something in common, which is, you know, taking care of your place and making sure the kids are safe and playing nicely.
Dude, it's funny. And it, you make me think about, so our block, when we first moved in here, I think we've been living here, I guess it's Block Street. When we first moved in here 5 years ago, we moved in, we got in right at the tail end of school. We're really fortunate. It was like the last couple of days of June. Mm-hmm. And that's good because, I mean, in the high school world, you're in exam mode. You're sort of cleaning up your classroom. But, you know, ostensibly, your students are no longer there. So it kind of freed up, you know, getting done at the end of the day, you can kind of put some time towards, you know, moving boxes and, you know, maybe we were over at the new place here painting it. Like, so you're getting the stuff done. So 5 years now, we've been spending time with the neighbors and getting to know people and building those connections and relationships. And like you say, that's standing out there talking about the lawn, you know, what was going on the other night? Wow. Yeah. You know, we heard noises. Like you get to that level of conversation where it's a little bit like small talk, but it's like small talk 2.0. Like you actually feel like you can ask a question back about what somebody said. And that's, for me, you start to feel like you're getting to know the person a little bit more. But it's funny when you do that, you sometimes hit moments of, wow, my neighbors really aren't like me. And this neighborhood isn't really like my household extended. You start to get glimpses of values and associations in their own home and family configurations. And it's fascinating to sort of just pause there for a moment, you know, withholding that kind of judginess. Oh, my family would never do that. You get kind of protective immediately, but you open yourself up to it and, you know, entertain both ideas, the stuff that you like and you don't like, but recognizing somewhere through there is your way to connect to people, like having to sort of exist in that middle space. And there's things that I love about my neighbors. And then there's other stuff that I think there's other stuff where I kind of go, that's not my family. So I say, I love that. Like, I would love to try having that kind of a celebration. I'd love to have that kind of, and there's other stuff you kind of go, yeah, that's not for me. And then there's other stuff I was like, wow, that really is, I disagree. Like you kind of have that never, ever kind of a response. Mm-hmm. So I'm open to always meeting the new people because I think it's also important for my kids to be able to kind of run the street and meet lots of people and to be able to eye speak to new people. I'm more of the parent that says, yes, you're going to meet strangers, but I want you to have the tools to figure out what's happening in that moment when you meet the stranger. And then, I mean, if you have to, and do what you got to do, if you're going to connect, sure. If you're going to start kicking, like let go of me, kind of, because it's right, you know, we take for granted all those little kind of check boxes that happen when you meet somebody new. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you make me think about that what it's like to build deep relationships with your neighbors and what you hang on to. When I speak about, you know, my neighbors, that family that we've known them from before we had kids, both of us. And we were just reminiscing last night. We're saying like, I'm looking forward to whatever our future game night is, where our kids maybe have their own kids and we can sit there and sort of share those stories about, remember when it was just us playing cards, or remember when it was us and trying to play that game with our kids screaming. Remember when the kids didn't really want to come to our game night anymore? And look at it now. It's like us, the kids and the kids. Yeah, it was a weird kind of time travel moment about neighbors. That's so on point. I like you kind of going there.
Yeah, no problem. It's just listening to you talk about, you know, what resonates with you and what doesn't work with you. The same thing here. And I think when you have a decent relationship with them, you can tell them that. So the other day, as we're watching the kids, The girl across the street runs into her house, and then my son runs right back in, like right behind her.
Yep.
And I look at my neighbor and I'm like, dude, I'm really sorry about that. I'm going to talk to him about that. And he said, no, it's no big deal. Like, they've been playing a lot together lately, and he knows that he can just come in when she comes in because it's just part of the flow. And I said to him, I'm not going to do well when a stranger runs into my house. And he said, fair enough. He goes, but would you consider us strangers now? And I said, no. So if my son ran into my place and she ran right in behind him, it's not a big deal to me. But it was just funny how we were talking about just the different norms and how, you know, if the kids are in my backyard and my son does something that's totally offside, then I'll say to him, you know what, buddy, like, you need to come in now. You need to tell your friend to go home. I don't have any social graces that way. Like, I don't care if she goes home and says, oh, you know, Roland, he was really upset with Will. The word upset, but some people, I would just be like, game's over. You know,
yeah.
It's time for your friend to go home. You're coming in. I'm not messing around. I don't care whose kid it is. Mm-hmm. There are things that my kids have to do here. Like, we operate in a certain way. And you know, if he can't continue to be the polite, respectful kid that he normally is, then you can't play with other people right now in this environment, you know?
Yeah.
And then another thing that you said that really I could connect with was when you're talking about you and your neighbor working on your trees in the backyard near the like roof line and stuff like that. I have a house in the backyard. We call it the tree house because it's up on a hill. But this summer, my father-in-law and I put a roof on it. And I remember my father-in-law kept saying, like, it's really high up there, you know. Are you going up there? Because I'm not going up there. Like, it's not that high. But when I was up there nailing this stuff to the roof, I was like, holy cow, this is pretty high. But by that point, you have no choice. It's like, you do the roof or you don't do the roof. And when it's half up, you're going to finish the other half. So that was funny. I thought that was funny when you said that. I thought, oh, yeah, I should take a picture and share that with you. You can see, you're going to be like, no, what's the big deal? I'm like, well, you get on the top of the ladder all the way up there now with nothing to hold on to, really. It was something else. It was interesting. And I can't imagine going on to like the roof of a house and actually like building a real roof. I can't even imagine. I wouldn't want to do that. So I guess I'm in the right profession.
Yeah, it's funny. And so I guess the chapter two, maybe this is the prologue to this story, and I was just looking for it. I'm going to see if I can find it at some point during our chat. I think it was 2 years ago. We were having little bits of roof issues, and we had to have a guy come out. There's a good company in town, and very honest. We've done quite a bit little fixes here and there with the company. They also do full roofing stuff. And the guy came out and he went up on the roof and he said, okay, here's the situation. He took some pictures. He showed it to me. He said, I can patch it. He said, but you can see it's going to be a progressive thing. Like, it's not going to heal. It's not going to get better. And it basically comes down to two different, flues on the roof that are in line. And because they're directly in a line, as the water comes around one and wraps, it keeps following this exact same path over and over and over again. And it's kind of wearing out the shingles between the two. So it happened a couple times. We kind of nickel and dimed it, and we finally said, okay, we're gonna have to do the roof. We're gonna have to get the roof done. So before we got that done, and the family was away somewhere and I was home, I got in my mind that I wanted to get up on the roof to see what the roof looked like from my POV. And I'm not trained in any way, but I thought, if there's specific damage, I'm going to be able to see it. And like I said, we also have, there's a lot of wildlife, and we have heard, like, between the ravens and, you know, definitely squirrels, one or two raccoons have gotten up on our roof. And my roof is, it's high. Like, it's high from the ground, but I'll tell you, from up there, it's a lot higher. It's a fascinating perspective shift. And I can remember my first thought when I got up there after, this is, how am I going to get comfortable? Because I sat down on the roof before just to get my bearings. I took a selfie from up there and I sent it to Karen, my wife. And I, to this day, I still don't know. I'm pretty sure that was like one of the worst texts I've ever sent, because part of it was a totally out of context. Like, it's just, I just did this thing. And, but you know, you make me think of a bunch of things. Like, maybe I could be a roofer, because I kind of got used to it up there. I shouldn't be on the planning committee though. Like, I shouldn't, like, I might be the labor, but I didn't have the forethought to think about, because it's funny. I have a short ladder that worked out just fine. Like, my house has sort of like a front lower roof, which is fairly easy to get up on. And then you bring the ladder up, and then you sort of lean it again, and then you climb up that next stage. The going up part, where you have, it's funny, going up and coming down, like, it's the same angle, but it feels totally different. But it's the exact same angle. Your head at the top of your body moving upward, it almost feels like you have better balance. As I rotated around and tried to come back down the ladder, ooh, like, that was something else. Like, I was like, this is it. Good thing I sent the text. Maybe she's zooming home right now, because she's going to find me somewhere in, you know, in the bushes, the the flowers out front. Yeah, I not the planner, the labor I could do. But I will tell you, there was a really cool moment when I kind of settled myself and I looked around my neighborhood to see my neighborhood from that height. It's pretty cool. It was pretty cool. If I can find the picture, I'll shoot it your way. Maybe we can throw it in with the show notes or whatever. Because my memory is that I look pretty happy, but I'm sure if I look back at that photo, it's probably a little bit more like white knuckled. Like, I'm trying to smile. Like,
so you're recalling the event as something that was positive.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about it and you're alive.
Yeah, exactly. I'm celebrating. This is a celebration. It's a roof story that ends in a celebration of life at the fact that I'm still alive.
That's funny. So you want to jump into our work week now? You want to talk a little bit about work? Because you said something this week that really has me reflecting on a bunch of things in the way I operate at school with my students. You said that you caught yourself this week talking to a student about mindfulness or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you found that you kept going back to edu-speak, and mm-hmm. you couldn't break yourself out of that mode mm-hmm. in terms of communicating with your student. And I want you to dive right in. I want to hear all about that and what happened and what that really means.
So, and I think touched on this maybe last week, but just my portfolio minimum will be a 3-year stay with where I currently am. So last year was all about looking at how do we share. So when I arrived, I really had the sense that so much of what was going on in the program was really closed. Not much was being shared out. And in doing so, some of the cool resources and references and the support of the community wasn't happening in a way that I had been used to. Because my previous portfolio, my department, the alternative education, was nothing without outside sources. I don't believe for a second, like, I have high interest in every single one of the areas of curriculum that I have to teach a kid, but I do not have the specialty to dive deep enough, like, on my own. I just don't. So often I was reaching out to departments. I'm saying, like, who right now, not who's the best lesson designer, because I feel like I can get structured lessons for grade 11 university math. Who is it that just loves their content area? Because I feel like that's someone that I can learn from. That's someone I can totally learn from. And I can seek out the core in other places, but I need to see how someone loves it, where they connect with it, what's their dance, what's their shuffle, why do they go left instead of right, these sort of things, and observe it in its natural state, and I'll take what I need. So sharing and connecting with the community was very natural to me. So year one in Access was all about, how do we do something similar? How do we reach out? How do we get the impression from the school board and the PLN now? You know, I really do think about my PLN, my local PLN, I feel is like North America. So any of those resources that I get in, awesome. Year two, once we've sort of, we got used to activating in that way on top of, you know, the teaching and the working with the kids, but that layer, that social layer that comes on top of it, we want to now add the wellness layer. So this year we are intentionally building in moments where we're pausing and starting just very simply with some mindful activities. And we have a card deck. So this past summer, I took a course in July to help me understand the sort of the vastness of what you can do with mindfulness activities. Mm-hmm. It was something that I found through my school board, but it wasn't directly associated. What was the name of it? I actually have it right here. That's funny. I have the card. So this, it was something called Smart Education. And it was facilitated by a phenomenal psychologist, Amita Dudeney. And this is the company right there, Mindfulness Every Day. And we were doing something called Smart Education. And Smart Education it's a data-driven approach, research-driven approach to wellness. And when you include the slow practice, whatever it might be, if you do meditation or if you do yoga, tai chi, and you sort of couple that with some of the research around the health benefits of doing this, then you start to have something that's a pretty powerful tool to get centered, however you want to articulate it, and to sort of develop your practice of that. So coming into this year, talking with Pam, the CYW I work with, we're like, okay, how are we going to work this in? And even between us, we got bogged down with a lesson plan. And I say bogged down only because in some ways, we've all had moments, I believe we've all had moments that you can't articulate, yet you have an emotional association with. It's the things that you feel connect and speak to your soul. I mean, you know, love of family often exists in that space. You know it, you feel it, you're bound by it, you're broken by it, you're lifted by it. Sometimes to speak of it, it just doesn't do it justice. And that was the moment that I was having with this student that I found myself lacking in a method. It's not a method, but I was lacking in an approach where I could speak from the soul about what mindfulness is to me and why it could be important to education. And this was a conversation that happened a couple times during the course that I was taking, because it was primarily teachers there. And to sort of start to layer on, the edge you speak inevitably moves you towards measured and quantifiable outcomes. So the provocation or the reflection that I was flowing through this week is, you know, are there some things, and I had a couple other conversations about, is, you know, are all learning spaces, do they have to be for learning? Your classroom, does every inch have to be for learning? And I had someone message me back and say, well, doesn't learning happen all the time? And then I had, I started to think about what somebody else had said in conversation about, and it's a great question that came from Jen Giffen. She was saying, well, doesn't learning happen all the time? And then that made me think about another conversation that I witnessed between Aviva Dunziger and Andrew Campbell, where they were talking about play-based, play-based learning or place-based learning. And what Andrew kind of put down at one point, he said it kind of centers around intentionality. And if there's intentionality, then it swings a little bit more towards learning. But play is play, open-ended, non-specific, and engaged. And that's the moment that I found myself talking to this kid. Kid participated in our mindfulness activity, which was a breathing activity and a visualization activity of being a mountain. And there was a mantra that went along with it, a two-line mantra, breathing in, a line that you say as you breathe in and a line that you say out. And I think it was maybe 4 or 5 times we did it. That was it. Our mindful moment lasted maybe 5 minutes. I think the power structure and the daily structure of a classroom creates lines that make it difficult to include mindfulness. And that just kept on wrapping through my head all week. That was the thing. That's what you were witnessing on Twitter, you know, that exploration of that conversation.
Well, I've been thinking about it a lot, and a couple of things stand out, like your question about, or the question, does your classroom have to be a place for learning? Like, can it offer, is learning the context that we're always in? And I would say yes, at school. And the whole piece of EDU language or philosophy or whatever you want to call it, the bubble we live in as educators, mm-hmm. It creeps in. And I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm trying to understand what you're saying. And when I think about what you're saying, I reflect on my experience. And my experience is that it's very difficult for me to step outside that bubble. And I think it goes back to what we were talking about the last time we spoke last week, about teachers being more than teachers. But you feel like you're more than a teacher, but I can't step out of the teacher role. So, for example, at recess on Friday, a student brought his drone to school, and he wanted to know if he could bring a couple of friends with him and I could supervise them in the gym while he shows me how he uses his drone and what he can do with it. So it was a moment where, you know, he knows that I'm interested in those things, and he knows that I talked about it last year when he was my student. So now he's thinking, I'm going to bring my drone to school, and I'm going to show my former teacher what I've been doing with it and how to use it. At a time that's appropriate. So recess, because I'm not teaching and he's not in class learning. He's supposed to be outside, you know, socializing, getting some fresh air. Mm-hmm. And people would argue that that's the time that, you know, I get to use the bathroom and connect with a colleague about something, or, you know, work on some planning or whatever, make a phone call. That's the time that I would do that stuff. Mm-hmm. So we go to the gym, and he starts in on it, and I keep doing what I can to just connect it back to our learning. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to step outside of that, and I wanted to just be like, you know, show me some tricks. Like, I'm not going to ask you about math, and I'm not going to ask you to figure out the measurements of where we're standing and where you might land this thing and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not going there. Let's just talk about, show me some cool tricks that you learned. And I'd love to hear, you know, how did you learn those tricks? How long did it take? Just all this stuff that I would normally do without thinking about it. But now I was really thinking about it, because I was thinking about your tweet, and I was thinking about what I said about teachers being more than teachers and trying to step out of it. But I found it so difficult. And I talked to a colleague about it. And I think that for me, it's difficult because as an educator, there are expectations on us in terms of education. But the whole piece about helping these kids become good people and seeing a side of us that's just not related to work is important too. And I don't know, but some people probably can just turn it on and off, and I feel like I can't. And I feel it's because the true reason that I'm in a building called a school, working there as a teacher, is to teach. And when I attach my, when I attach myself to that, there's so many connections on what my role is as a teacher, my formal role. So what the ministry would say, what the school board would say. And I know it's much more than that, but I just, you know, like, it's easy for me to unplug at the hockey rink. If I see kids at the hockey rink, it's easy, because that's me as a dad in that moment in time. It's not me the educator, even though I'm always the educator. I don't even know if I'm explaining it properly. I just feel like I'm exploring why I'm so rigid with those lines and how I can loosen up a bit, because I think loosening up is going to benefit myself and others. I don't know. I mean, I cringe when I see certain people talk to kids at school in a certain way, because I'm like, whoa, you just stepped over a major line.
Yeah.
And to them, they don't even see a line. It doesn't exist, because it's their perspective. It's their reality. So does the classroom have to be totally for learning? I want to say no, but you know, when you're in my classroom, there's always going to be some kind of lesson or learning attached, I would think, even though, like, let's say a kid came to my room and was upset about something that happened at home. And so they were going to just sit there, they're going to cry and talk about their situation. My mind automatically connects to, okay, listen carefully so that you can provide some feedback or guidance, as, you know, listen to what they have to say and really get it and be prepared to come back with something or nothing, depending on your strategy, but also be prepared to operate in a way that if they say something, that if they disclose information, you know, that could lead to them harming themselves or them having been harmed, then I need to act as the educator and fulfill my duties that way, which sounds kind of harsh, but I mean, we do have a duty to report, and but we also are humans who have built a relationship with these people, and if they feel comfortable to discuss an issue or share something that has nothing to do with school, I mean, I'm not going to stop them, right? I'm going to listen to them, and I'm going to try to lend them some kind of support. So that's, I just, it's a fascinating world to be kind of exploring in my mind. It's fascinating. My wife would tell you that I'm a rule follower. So I'm very anal to the rules most of the time. Sometimes I'd like to see them bent a little bit, or I bend them to meet what I need to get done. But I'm more of a rule follower. I see the rule and I try to meet that expectation. And I think the overriding rule in my brain of, you're a classroom teacher, therefore there are certain things you need to do at all times, kind of lives up there all the time.
It's funny. I was having a talk this week with, in class, talking about the difference between introversion and extroversion. And I came to realize in a lot of ways, like I'm an introvert. It's weird. I think quickly I would say, no, I'm extroverted, but I exist more in my own head. I think I get drive from my own kind of ideation. It's not absolute, but if I have to draw the line, I think I fall closer to introversion, and just a willingness to share with my community, an open introvert, growth mindset introvert. I don't know. You made me think about the moment where you were sort of, you know, the student bringing this opportunity to fly the drone, and the complexity of that moment, I think, can be really fascinating. There's a podcast that I've checked out called Code Switch, and the heart of that podcast is that it deals with equity issues in the States. But part of the heart of code switching is around that idea of using kind of two different conventions of communication almost simultaneously. So you can sort of be of two minds. And one of the things that they've talked about is the reason that we code switch. Like, why is it that we sort of use these two different styles of communication simultaneously? And sometimes it can be confusing in so much as if you are, like, I can remember my mom, and I only speak a little bit of Polish. My mom is fluent in Polish and English, and my grandmother is full-on Polish with very little English. So often family get-togethers, I would hear them talking together in Polish, and I would be able to pick up on a few words and some of the tone and color of what's being said. And then often my mom would be playing translator to me. So she's code switching back and forth. She's sort of having to take the moment between her and her mom and then make it something for me so that I understand. And the code switching, as I've sort of understand it, I mean, you do it for a bunch of different reasons. Sometimes it's what your lizard brain does. So in that moment where you're flipping between the two, sometimes it's just that sort of like fight or flight. I don't know what to do next, but I know I have to jump on one thing or another. The other part is sometimes to fit in. Like you might have her speaking to her mom, speaking Polish, was very much about fitting in and feeling connection. Sometimes it was also secret code, which is another reason here. Like, I had no doubt that often the conversations that my grandmother was having with my mom, the intention there was to keep it from the little English speaking kids in the room. And as parents, I think we can kind of connect with that. You know, that idea, like, you can throw an aside really quick and maybe the kids don't pick up on it, or maybe they don't know the language of your culture. So you can sort of, you can dual code that way, right? But I think back to that moment where the child brings to you this drone, which taps into one of your codes, and then you snap back to the code of the school. And I think that those moments in general become, they are in some ways the lifeblood of teaching right now. What set of understanding or rules or learning can I confidently use right now to make this moment awesome? Like, to make it positive, make it amazing. Is this an opportunity that if I push too hard to use a certain code right now, does it actually ruin this opportunity? And I mean, maybe I'm over-articulating the learning. This is a teachable moment, learning moment. But I think it's, my problem is in the phrase teachable moment. What if it's just an experience? And the dual coding forces us to put language on it that actually strips it of its value. And I know that's a completely loaded statement. There's rules and regulations, flying a drone in school, I get that. But what about the simple moments where this happens too? So it's not about doing something potentially dangerous in class. What if it's one of your own children saying, you know, daddy, can I ride my bike around the block? And what code do you use? Where are you pulling from in order to do that? And that was, again, something that, not to draw it back to my moment with the student this week, but that's the two different, I found like I was existing in two different languages that I couldn't harmonize.
So, and what do you think? Okay, I like the idea of code switching, but what do you think was stopping you from switching codes when you were working with that student this week and you were straddling the fence?
Like, yeah.
Why couldn't you step over to one side or the other?
Well, I think you hit on it, that tweet you threw back my way. Like, is it just, am I leaning on what's been learned and the kind of overarching structures that I've just been soaked in? Is it the water, right? So we're just constantly in that. That's a great exploration. For me, I'm just sticking with the moment, because to notice that happened reminds me that, one, I don't understand enough about education. Two, I'm not far enough down that path of mindfulness to not let it bug me, because, you know, part of our hope in sort of working through some of these activities is that capacity to have multiple thoughts, to recognize multiple thoughts in your head and just to let them go by. You don't have to grab on with them. You can just stay in the experience of sort of watching them go by. So this is a very sort of young Padawan kind of observation that I had. But because it was done in public, it becomes something to talk about, right? Like, this happened between the three of us sitting at the table in this particular activity. And it isn't always opportune to sort of say, okay, now that we've had a mindfulness moment, let's rip it apart and analyze it for its constituent parts. You know, like it sometimes you can do that. You can debrief. Other times you need to go away and become contemplative about what just happened. Like you need to sort of think about it on your own. Usually the exact thing that I won't say usually, but what I've experienced is sometimes in PD sessions where the hint of reflective practice is introduced, that the structure and the box that it's shoved in, okay, for the next 30 minutes, we're going to be reflective practitioners. Go. Come on, man. Like, really? Okay. All right. I'll do my best, you know? So yeah, it connects with so much. That moment was profound for me. It makes me wonder about wander with an A or wonder with an O. You know, other instructors that find themselves caught in that, which code book do I use? And I just realized that staying at that crossroads is actually, there's a reason for that. And my inability to move forward, there's a reason for that too. And I'm still kind of thinking about it, dude.
Well, that's good. I mean, you're probably going to be thinking about it for a while. But the good thing is that you sharing it is allowing other people to consider their perspective as well. So, I mean, even just listening to you talk about it again in this context, I think about the code switching that I'm trying to do at school, and I am doing it. It's just weird. Like, it's just weird to step out of yourself and to look down and to see how you practice and when you switch code. So as you're talking about it, I'm reminded of a situation this week where one of my students had a meltdown and decided he was going home. And so he's done this a couple of times now in the past few weeks where he gets this look on his face, starts to cry, and then gets up and literally walks out of the room and just starts packing his bag and changing his shoes. And he switched his code, like he's gone. It's end of the day for him. Mm-hmm. And I go over to the door and, I say, like, what's up? What's going on? He goes, I'm going home. I'm done for the day. Mm-hmm. And usually my first reaction is, hey, man, I wish I was done for the day too, but I'm not. I'm still here. And this is, you have to consider that. So this child is upset, like totally emotional. There's no rational going on. So I think part of what I do to help myself deal with it is the humor. So I start with, hey, you know, I wish I could go home too, but it's just not happening yet.
Yeah.
And then I get a response. And then I think in those situations, I'm careful because at that time, he does not want to hear. He does not want to hear the education code. Mm-hmm. He wants me to switch into an emotional state. Like he wants, well, this is what I'm saying. I think he wants, because when I do this, it works. So when I turn off the education switch and I just say to him, you know what? I'm in there. I've got to do a couple of things. Mm-hmm. So don't go yet, because I really like to talk to you before you go home for the day. So I'm kind of acknowledging that I see you're leaving. And I'm not going to stop you at the moment, but what I'm going to tell you is that before you go, I need to talk to you. And that's worked. I mean, he's said, okay, I'm just going to sit here then. My stuff's packed. I'm going to sit here. So he'll finish packing the bag and he'll sit on the floor in the hallway and be in his emotional state. And I'll kind of look in the room and I'll look at the EA that's in there at the moment and I'll say, can you keep an eye on him?
Yep.
Because I got to go back in and I can't just stand here. So I go, I do a few more things. And I intentionally come back a couple of minutes later and say, okay, everybody's set. They're working on something. Come back in and you can tell me what's up. I continue joking. I can say, let me know how I triggered you. Uh-huh. And I will work on fixing that. And then, so he'll come in and then you get the next phase, which is negotiation. So
yeah, I know,
I have to switch from, now I'm moving out of emotional, I'm going back to rational,
yep,
because this kid's going to try to play me. So I have to play to show him I'm there to listening and I'm there to help, but you're not just going to make any deal you want. So then I'm fascinated by the different codes and the switches that are happening, but all with the umbrella of that one big switch at the top of the wall, which is the EDU switch.
Yeah.
And that doesn't get turned off until I'm in my car driving away. So I visualize this one big switch at the top of the wall, and then underneath is an array of other switches, emotional switches, rational switches, humor switches, family switches, because sometimes, you know, and every kid has their own particular switch that you use switch them. So it's just neat, because thinking about what you said and then connecting it to one of my experiences, I can see a little bit more. I'm not as rigid as I think I am. I'm going back and forth and I'm doing what I need to do, all under the umbrella of I'm at school, I'm a teacher, and I'm more than a teacher, but I can't just let kids get up and leave whenever they want. Because there's all kinds of safety issues there and concerns.
Of course.
But in the end, this is what seems to work with this one student, whereas with other students, it would never work. That would never work. So I want to thank you for helping me reflect and going down that road, because number one, I kind of realize I'm not as inflexible as I believe myself to be. And number two, I am able to jump back and forth, I think, successfully most of the time based on the situations that present themselves in front of me. And the mindfulness, the well-being, I'm really happy that came up, because at my school, we do a whole school Christian meditation once a week. But I also do a lot of that in my classroom. And I'm trying to get the kids to find a way to turn off their switches and to just whatever's in their mind, just let it kind of run through. You need to take some time to like de-stress, deflate, and just, like you said, center yourself, for lack of a better word, calm yourself, learn how to do that. And so we do a lot of that. And there's a few teachers and I, we're really interested in well-being this year, because we've got classrooms composed in interesting ways that require the students and the teachers to have a way to disconnect, have a way to ensure that there's a plan to keep us, all of us, moving in the right direction. Even if it means taking a step or two back every now and again, we need to remember that if we're not healthy, if we're not moving in a direction that's beneficial to everybody, then somebody might get left behind and it might cause more problems later on, even though at the moment it might feel like it, not taking care of yourself might feel like, oh, I'm just doing this for now because I need to get through this or this, but it snowballs, right? And it gets bigger and bigger until you can't function in an effective way anymore. So you said a lot of things that got me going, got me thinking about my practice, what's going on currently. And the most exciting part is, what do I do next? How do I proceed from this point forward? All with one tweet.
Sometimes it works, eh? Sometimes you can get there. And I would say that, you know, where you and I already connected, I was really appreciative of, other members of my Twitter sphere that were jumping in and helping me to see it from different perspectives, both similar to my thinking and dissonant. It was really important for me to kind of let that rock kind of tumble a little bit and allow other things to kind of impress or kind of shape my thinking on it. I knew, it was funny, I knew the... I felt the power of the moment that I was in, and I knew that I had to do more. It was going to create more thinking. I didn't know what that thinking would be, but I knew that that sort of moment was going to stick with me. And I really craved kind of extending that moment out a little bit just to see how other people would see it. So the different perspectives were really appreciated, because it did help me I definitely am not firm in it yet. I'm not set, but I feel like I have some better tools to know what next questions I ask. So it becomes a little bit more, definitely longer term. And as you say, it's part of a classroom project of looking at ways of including the these moments in that learning space, right? And my challenge is finding the sweet spot between the mindful centering in the activity and the balance between the experience of the activity with whatever structure that kind of needs to be there. And sometimes it's the distance of the structure that can actually make it seem like the structure has taken a far enough back seat. So as if, you know, you said there are times when that structure, whatever it is, has to be right around the activity in order to really protect everyone involved. And then I'm sure you could do some sort of measurement as to what does the depth of learning look like in a moment like that, where it's just so closed around it. And then you have other activities where you can sort of take some of those structures one step back. And then what's the quality of learning? What's the quality of experience? I guess where I think is what happens if that structure of learning is so far off because the experience is kind of so singular. And if the structure gets too close to it, it brings out, it becomes a distraction to the actual experience. So can I ask you a question about something? About something you said before?
Go for it.
Sorry, this becomes a little bit of a 90 degree. I wrote down the bag of work.
Yes, and okay.
So you started with the, feeling a little rock star status for making it through the tasks, right? And seeing your way through that. But it totally connected with me that sort of, and the, you know what? It's funny. The bag of work is kind of like a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday sort of a thing. But the bag of work you pack on Friday is a little bit different. There's something about it, right? It's like, sometimes I call it like, I've said this before about myself. It's, and this is entirely about me. It's the happy stupid. It's like, I feel so like on Friday, I'm ready to roll out of here. And I'm going to pack up just like two more textbooks because that I'm somehow going to make that. I'm going to do something with it this weekend. And somewhere in the back of your brain, you're like, yeah, I know, like there's some little researchy thing or want to find an activity or there was a, I gotta be prepped for that math lesson or that geography lesson. So I'm going to grab it out of that textbook. And that bag of work is like, it's Sherpa style. Like you're packing that up, like you're heading out on a walkabout. And then the bag of work sits at the front door. And then sometimes Monday morning you come around and I've actually said to myself, you know, where's my bag? Where's my backpack? I'm like, it's right by the door. How perfect is that? Cause often like a busy weekend for me where I'm just clicking on all cylinders, where I'm hanging with the kids, you know, chatting with you, developing a little something for myself, you know, hanging with my wife, just and doing fun stuff. My backpack could be distributed over the whole house. But more times than not, the true measure of how productive I've been on the weekend is whether or not that, you know, Monday morning, my bag's already packed. I'm just throwing a new, well, to be honest, I've even gone so far. Like, have you ever pulled your lunch dishes out of your backpack Monday morning? You're like, where's my sandwich container? And you're like, oh, I didn't even take it out of my backpack. And then you go to your backpack, you're like, oh, I didn't even take out my textbooks. And you see that folder of marking that you're supposed to get to too. You totally got me with that, the bag of work. And I have no doubt. Here's one of the moments in our conversations that when somebody listens to that bag of work, I have no doubt, like every single teacher has a bag of work story and they have a spot where they know if they see, for me, it's also important that if I am going to do that work, I have to put it in my way. So if I leave it by the front door, because I come home thinking, okay, I'm going to set this down and I don't want it to be in anyone's way. I don't want anyone to trip over it. I tell the kids, put your crap away, my own children. So if I leave it right out, someone could call me on that, like, oh, come on, Dad, you're not putting your stuff away. But I also know if I put it in the spot that I normally do, what bag of work, you know, I find it Monday morning.
Okay. You know what? Let's decode. That's totally decode the bag of work. The bag of work, I'm going to generalize. I'm going to say every teacher, like you said, packs a bag of work that they plan on doing over the weekend. And like you said, it's Sherpa style. It's loaded because at that moment in time, that elation that you feel about the end of the day coming on Friday, that glorious feeling that you get.
Intoxicating.
Yes, it's so intoxicating. It so messes with your brain chemistry.
It does.
You pack this bag with all your great ideas for all the great work you're going to do over the weekend. And then when you get home, the deadliest thing is putting it down in the same place that you put it all the time, because it's just going to live there all weekend. So let me tell you, and I'm no all-star. Trust me, there have been many times where that bag of works, like I put it down and I don't touch it. And Monday morning, I'm like, I look down at it like it's an old friend. And I'm like, it's nice to see you, old friend.
Let me hug you.
I hope you had a restful weekend, because I didn't spend any time with you.
But, I know. How you doing?
Okay. So I figured out on Friday how to keep that moment of elation going. So what I think I did was I left some of the potion right outside the bag. And so this is what happened. We get home. And funny thing is, my work wasn't even in a bag. I didn't even bag it. I just grabbed the pile of folders that I had.
Yep.
I was doing some, I'm doing some literacy assessment stuff, and it's tedious. And I'm not sure I've met anybody who really enjoys doing it, because it's so tedious that it provides great data for you after the fact, but to get to that data, it's a nightmare. So I bring this stuff home. I've got 25 kids in my class at the moment. So I've got 25 folders with a bunch of assessments in each folder, and like the manual that shows me how to do it, and photocopies of stuff that I have to write on and put in their folder. Okay. And I know what's ahead of me. Like, I know it's going to kill me, but it has to be done. So I get home and I'm excited on Friday, because it was one of my wife's birthday celebrations with the extended family. So we get home, I get home, I put it down, start tidying up the house, getting things ready for people coming over. And then we have our get together, and it's a great time. And then everybody leaves. My wife and I tidy up, and I look over and I see the pile, and I'm like, it's time. It's time that we reunite. So I pop that little potion bottle and pour some of that stuff on me to give me that elation. And it was 8:45 PM and I was dead tired, but I'm like, I'm doing this. So I crack open the first folder and I just start doing it. So my wife, we're in the same room, and usually this is the time where we chill together and kind of deflate before we hit the sack.
Yeah, for sure.
And I tell her, I'm here, but I'm doing this. This is the bag of work is like, I'm making a dent in this thing. She's like, yeah, go for it. So 8:45 to 9:30, I've gotten through maybe six folders. And I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted from the day. I'm exhausted from this work, because it's mentally, it takes a lot out of me. So I close it up and I'm like, okay, bag of work's going to continue tomorrow. And I'm going to get this done before midday, before my son has baseball Saturday afternoon. It's getting done. It's not dragging on to my Sunday. So wake up Saturday morning as if I was going to work. That's how early my son's hockey was. Go do hockey. Come home. Make both the boys breakfast, and okay, look over at the folders. I'm like, bring it on. I hit them so hard. I got them done in the next hour and a half to 2 hours, got them all done. And now I can say that the bag of work is sitting exactly where I put it when I came in, and it's all done. And so now I had Saturday evening to myself, like to do family stuff. And then today is going to be some more family stuff. And I do still have a mental bag of work. Like my IEPs are calling my name and they're yelling so hard that they're waking me up at night. So I might spend,
well said.
I might spend, you know, half an hour. I might visit with the IEP bag of work just to get it started, but I can't do anymore. Like my brain is operating on thinking about cool activities to engage in with the kids this week, but in a very informal way. And I can tell you, I do feel like a rock star having gotten through the pile of work that I brought home that had to be done. The primary goal was to get that stuff done. I do feel like a rock star. And every teacher that goes into that bag at home deserves a medal, because like you said, that elation that we feel when we're packing up to go home, we are so pumped to be going home that we just, we'll shove anything into that bag. And I can't even believe some of us can get them to the car. That's how heavy they are. They're just being dragged across the parking lot. So kudos to any of my teacher friends or non-teacher friends who are teachers that that know about that bag of work. And we just decoded it. Like, that's what we do. It's every hilarious. Teacher does it. And yeah. teachers that don't do it, it's funny because they're just revolting against the system. They're like, forget the bag. The bag's not getting any of my time, but it's there. Everybody knows about
it, the it bag is. Of work. It is. I did a quick peek on Google there. Just, I wish I could do a timeline image search. I'll figure out how to do it. And you throw in teacher bag and see, uh-huh. you know, the evolution of size and just what that looked like. Cause there's, you're right. Like sometimes it can just be a stack. I went through a phase where my, my bag, the actual bag was like the grocery store reusable bags.
Yes. Yes.
Cause they're tough, right? And you don't feel so bad if they get trashed or slightly waterproof. You could, you know, they're really squish them up into a ball. I think the thing that you made me think about this, because part of it too is, and this is a motivation thing, is when you said you got up as if you're going to work. Now, on one hand, getting up as if you're going to work on a day where, like, I don't know if you could say someone, you get up as if you're going to have a day off. Like, I don't know what that really looks like, but I really get getting up as if you're going to work because it's that trigger of work. That dressing, whatever personal habits you do, maybe you have a breakfast that you know is like your game day, your work day breakfast, right? But I think that's kind of key. Hey, though, just to wrap this thought of mine is that I've gone through all those similar steps and then got to school and that bag of work I forgot on the couch at home. So I've done that. And I mean, it's part of it is, you know, even in sort of getting all that work done, sometimes the brain will say, now that it's done, that loss of connection when you forget to do it can be very similar in nature to the loss of connection once it's done, it's put away, it's finished. And I get to work and I think to myself, yeah, what did I do with the folders of those IEPs? And right away, you know what it is? I imagine like, you know, those videos where it shows the dog sitting by the front door waiting for the owner to come home. Yeah, that's my bag of work sitting at the door, sitting there wagging its tail like, my owner will be back soon.
Well, actually, it's funny you say that. If we could add another layer,
yeah,
the bag of work that I brought home is coming back next weekend because there are several assessments that have that's to be funny. Done. I did the first assessment the other day. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to do the second assessment this week. So the bag's coming back. And it's, like you said, it's like a dog. It's happy. It can't wait to come back next week.
Oh, man.
It's crazy. But, man, when we talk about this teacher bag of work, it brings back a lot of fun memories for me. Like, I'm thinking back to my first couple of years of teaching mm-hmm. and how I was so dedicated. Like, when I started teaching in a classroom, I taught grade 7 and 8. And I had to beef up on the math that I was teaching these kids. So every night in that bag of work was a math textbook
yeah.
and the math workbook. And I was literally crafting lessons every night for the next day because I needed to know how that I could do this math. Like
yeah.
that I knew it enough that when a kid would say, hey, have you tried it this way? Or I don't get what you're doing, that I could differentiate. I had enough knowledge to be able to apply what I knew and to be able to twist it and turn it to communicate properly with my students. And I was dedicated to that bag. But then I remember one day, I disavowed any knowledge of the bag. I was like, nope, never seen it, never heard of it before. I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, it's like, okay, I love watching other teachers leave with their bags.
Oh, dude. I was just thinking that. For me, it wasn't the leaving, though. Because sometimes, for me, it's everyone leaves at such different times. But I find people tend to arrive more at the same time. And there's that parking lot, that slow walk back. And you survey around at like these, it feels like the soldiers coming back from from war, and everyone has like, and they've hacked together, some with grocery bags, some carrying like boxes of stuff. Like, you really do feel like people are just coming back from the wilderness, eh? And I think to, and you're sort of like, okay, who's going to get the door? Who's going to grab the door? My bag of work is bigger. So you grab the door, right? It's, oh, and the leaving part, that's so funny you're thinking that. I was just like, you know, who did more work over the weekend? And you know what the irony in that is? Is because you could be sitting there looking at someone else's massive stack of work, and they may have been just like you and I. It was sitting by the door the whole weekend. And you're sitting there looking, wow, look at all this. I should be doing more work, as you're carrying your own bag of work. Yet both of you, it just sat by the door. You just couldn't get to it. Stuff got in the way. Like, well, here comes another late night, right?
I'm going to say something controversial, and I'm going to say, and I kind of hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. I'm going to say 75% of those bags were left at the door for the whole weekend. That's what I'm going to say.
You know, I would Monday, love.
Monday morning, I'm going to go in, and I'm going to do my best to hit up a couple of colleagues and say,
I love it.
Did you take any work on home on Friday? And when they're going to say yes or no, and I'm going to say, did you work on it? And
yeah.
And you know what? I'm probably going to just burst out laughing. They're going to have no idea what I'm talking about. But that's I'm going to be proud, and I'm going to be holding my all-star badge. I'm going to say, yeah. I did all these folders, and I started my IEPs. That's what I'm going to say to them.
Yeah.
But I love... Okay, I get what you're saying about coming in, who's going to hold the door open, everybody's holding stuff. I get to work at a weird time because I drop the kids off at school, so I don't have any play. Like, I get to school at the same time every day, and it's usually closer to the time that I have to be there because right. my kids drop off. But leaving on Friday, I purposely stayed like 15 to 20 minutes later to just make sure I was getting certain things ready for Monday morning. And people walk past my room as they're leaving, and I see the bags. And like, now I can visualize it. Like you said, everybody's got a different bag. Some people have boxes. Some people at my school, one or two people, they have their kids go to my school. So I'll see the kids carrying their stuff out. But yeah, it's a hybrid. It's a mix, but we do have it in common. We all think we're taking something home to work on, and it doesn't happen, or you just run out of gas. Like Friday nights, I got nothing left. So the fact that I was able to work on Friday night for like from 8:45 to 9:30, it was like right there. If that was all that got done, I was an all-star in my mind, because I did it, and I did it on a Friday night of all nights. And then there's always the, I don't know about you, but then there's the always the distraction option.
Yes.
So let's say that this left, then I would be watching because there's something on, and then I have to mix the work with the pleasure in order to feel some of that intoxication.
Yeah.
The legal intoxication. And so there's always, it's really fun. We could do a whole podcast on the bag of work and what it looks like and how it's going. But
if you're asking, if you're asking over the next week, dude, what I'm going to do, I'm going to see if I can get some pictures. I'll see if I can get some media. If some of my colleagues would be willing, either the bag, what it looks like, what is it that people are carrying stuff back and forth? Or if they're willing to sort of like, show me the stack, what was it that was brought home on the weekend? Like just to give some life to this, because I think it's hilarious we've landed on this, and it's a lot bigger. I mean, and this isn't just about teaching. Everyone, I think there are a lot of different careers where the work that needs to be done sometimes doesn't get done between the bells or wherever you're actually on your work site. So this isn't I don't think this isn't something specific to education, but it is a heck of a lot of fun when you land on just that. It's like that perfect imagery that the bag of work and how it communicates to, I think, multi experiences, you know? And I'm even just thinking about that moment, like how different the bag of work looks for the seasoned teachers, like the ones that are just like so ninja at their job. It's like, what do they ever carry home? You know, they're just like they're just like Teflon. Like they're just cruising out there at the end of the day because they know their game. They get it done somehow. And there are those individuals that get it done somehow. And then there's like you and me, the Sherpas of the EDU world. Just like I used to actually one time somebody said to me, they said, "You look like an educational nomad." They said those words to me because they saw me hustling through the hallways with my backpack, like between classrooms, my backpack, my cart. I had my laptop bag. Like I looked like, yeah, some sort of action hero, teacher action hero. They called me an educational nomad.
I like that. And I get that other professions have the bag of work. But yeah. I have to say, and if people want to jump in and tell me I'm wrong, go for it. I'd love to hear
your Absolutely. Perspective.
But the teacher bag of work, in my mind, takes the cake. Because if you're a lawyer and you're bringing home a bag of work, it's not going to be in a Zares bag, okay?
That's
it's
true.
Not going to be, it's not going to be in a reusable bag. If you're a doctor and you're bringing home your bag of work, it's not going to look the same as a teacher's bag. Teacher's bag is more like you said, like a nomad. We just grab whatever will work, okay? It might not even be a bag. It might be a basket. It might be, look at Roland. I just grab the files like a savage. Like I just grab them and I'm running out the door with papers everywhere, trying not to drop anything.
Yeah.
I will take two pictures. I will take, well, more than that. I will take a picture of my files right now where they sit on the stairs. And I will make sure you see that. I will take a picture of the playhouse roof. Mm-hmm. And you can laugh at me because when you look at it, you're going to be like, that's not high. And then I think like you, I think I'm going to check in with somebody mm-hmm. what their bag looks like and what if anything they took home. And I would love to snag some photos or even, the bag of work that never even left the room. Like they packed it and they're like, I'm leaving it here. And then they just go home.
Well, intentionally or accidentally, because that can happen too. You start to pack it, you get the call. And you make the mistake of having everything you need in your pockets. You're holding your door keys and you walk out the door, right? Yeah. You arrive back Monday morning and you're like, you don't even realize that you've lost it because you get home, you get out of your vehicle and you go in the house. And for some reason, you don't even check that point. Something distracts you, got to grab the mail. Oh, where's the dog? And you don't even realize that poor bag of work is just going to be lonely by itself back in the classroom for 2 days. Hopefully the caretakers, and then you get, wait, that's the one problem you figure out, like, did I leave that bag of work out on the table near the recycling? Dun, dun, dun.
So that'll be a great place to start the next time we talk. We can revisit the bag.
I'm in.
Okay. And I hope you have a solid week.
You too, buddy. Thanks for the decompression. This was a cool chat. This was fun, man.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know what? The bag of work is going to kill me now. Every time I see it, I'll even take a picture of my wife's bag of work. Every time I see it now, it's going to bring a smile to my face. It's going to be awesome.
It is the thread that connects it. It connects us, ain't it?
Okay. Well, have a good one. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely, man. Take care.
You too.